The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon to you, too.
This is Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Welcome, Bob.
Cue Bob. I got to turn my sound down. Who was using this thing?
I don't think it's you. I think it's...
It's probably me.
I meant to warn you. I think something has gone out on mic 3 there. I probably need to switch you to mic 4.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, listen, we're going to do a little online switch here.
Just because it, for some reason...
It hates us.
You
just say it.
And whoever is on it just sound really overdriven. So
interesting.
Don't know what's going on with that.
I'm on mic 4 now, but I don't hear me.
Well, today, fellas, in engineering land. All right, so today we're looking at the inside world of whistleblowers. We're going to take two different looks at it. Both Ryan and Kristen are from Philadelphia. Well, they live in Philadelphia now. I shouldn't say they're from there. I don't know that that's true. And we've had them on. We've had Kristen on before, and Ryan has also been a whistleblower in previous hearings with the Veterans Administration. So, for those folks that are going, oh no, are they doing the Veterans Administration again? You should be excited about this because this is all the news that you won't get. Because they're busy covering Baltimore or whatever. That's what preempted the hearing a couple weeks ago, was the Baltimore deal. And how much Baltimore can you see? You know what I mean? You've seen one riot. You've seen them all, I think.
Yeah, really.
Enough with the riots already. So,
it's those damn police out of control.
Well, exactly.
Somebody's got to get a handle on that.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
You should be able to, what was it? You should be able to... go steal. You have an area where you can go steal things when you get upset.
Oh, yeah. There's an area set up for those who wish to destroy.
There you go.
Yeah.
I wonder where that is in our town. We should try that out. So anyway, we're going to look with Kristen today. We're looking at the kind of the legal side of being a whistleblower, because that's a lot of times the problem. People don't speak up because they're afraid to, and they don't know really how to do it and protect themselves.
Well, because you hear a lot of stories of people that are whistleblowers, and then all of a sudden they're not employed anymore.
Well, that's mostly how it goes.
Yeah.
That's like 95% of the time.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're supposed to be protected.
But in Philadelphia, they've managed to be really successful with this, thanks to Kristen's foresight in going to law school, which was good planning on her part for working at the VA. Little did she know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, most people can't go to law school before they get their first job or whatever.
But they should have.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Kristen. How you doing?
Great. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
I was just going to say the same to you. Kind of a nice day to be chatting. It's kind of quiet out there. So when you first went to work at the VA, did you have any idea that you were going to be in all this hot water? I mean, how long did it take? I don't think we asked you that last time.
Oh, when I went to employee orientation, which was probably like the first and second day I was there, I started seeing things that were strange. Like when we came in, they told us, you know, we'd be a certain grade level every single year. And the day that we got there, they said, by the way, there's a mistake on this paper. You'll need to complete this other grade level before you move to GS-11. And everybody in the class looked around and they're like, are they allowed to do this? And I remember I went and asked about it and I said, I don't think this is legal. You gave us an agreement and this was the deal to take this job. And they said, I wouldn't complain about it. You're in your first year. It's your probationary year. And everybody knew, you know, just to be quiet. So to me, that was strange because I'm like, this is a legal agreement, you know. And, I moved here and took this job and was expecting this grade increase from a 7 to a 9 to 11. And they say, oh, you have to do a GS-10 first. And then when you get to working there and you talk to other people, they'll say, oh, they did that to us too. So then you learn that it's not a mistake. I guess it's part of the plan.
Standard procedure.
I started instantly always bringing up issues. But it wasn't until 2010 with the duplicate payments that I really got into it.
So bait and switch was your first clue.
Yeah, I know. I should have. But I had just moved here from Maryland, so I said, oh, geez, I guess I better be quiet.
Yeah, when in Rome, you know.
Yeah, better blend in. So for the people that are... that are trying to figure out how to do this, you know, how to deal with being a whistleblower. Maybe they work not for the VA, maybe they're with, you know, whatever, IRS or Social Security or some other federal agency. What's the actual procedure they're supposed to do, or that would be the, what would you advocate that they do based on experience?
I would collect evidence first before saying anything, because once you say something, once you whistleblow, depending on who you do it to, usually you're found out pretty quickly. You can whistleblow. First, you have to, if you don't report things to certain people, it's not considered whistleblowing. So you have to do it to the VA secretary or the media or Congress. So if you report something to your supervisor or the manager of your department, that doesn't count. That's not considered whistleblowing. So once you do something like that and follow chain of command, then they're on to you that you know something that they're doing wrong. So what you want to do first is collect all of your evidence, because they won't really take you seriously. If you are a whistleblower, you want to report things to the Office of Special Counsel, but without a lot of evidence, they'll just dismiss your case.
And how is the Office of Special Counsel? I know some of the Oakland folks finally went to them. Are they helpful? I mean, because the Inspector General, let's not leave them out, they can receive evidence. So if you have things that are private, you know, private information of people, social security numbers, medical information, a lot of the record keeping you're going to have as evidence is going to have, you know, material you can't take out of the building. You can't just fax to a lawyer. You're kind of stuck. You have to send it to the right place.
Yeah, and I think the Office of Special Counsel, they have very limited jurisdiction. It has to be, if you whistleblow, then for them to protect you, the agency has to have engaged in a personnel action against you, which the little trivial things that they do all day, like following you around the office and messing with your point standards, those aren't really personnel actions. So the Office of Special Counsel, they might tell you, yeah, we're not denying that these occurrences happened, but it's not retaliatory because it doesn't rise to the level of personnel action. So very few people get their case accepted by them.
So just because it counts as retaliation out here in the free world,
doesn't count like that in the government.
It's not like that, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's been a learning process for me, because I would, when things would happen, I'd report them right away, and then I learned the second you report something, they're on to you, and they're watching you like a hawk, and they're going to make it harder for you to report things. So you have to collect your stuff that you want to report first before you say anything.
Well, don't they also, once you've made those moves, don't they put you on, like, different tasks where they can watch you a little closer and don't get you involved in things that are potentially dangerous to them?
Yeah, I noticed certain things that I reported. They'd have meetings about it, and I wasn't, lately we haven't been included, Ryan and I. So I feel like if you're involved in something, they don't want you to know what's going on. They want to say that they fixed it, and they want usually people involved in those things that don't necessarily know all about the problem, because then they won't probably report things. So it's interesting how things happen. Or they might change your supervisor. I noticed one of the managers was following me around on break. Like, once you tell on them, they make it difficult for you. They'll give you random desk audits where they're allowed to give you a desk audit. But, you know,
What
is that?
What is a desk audit?
They're supposed to be going around checking for PII, misplaced PII, which would mean, you know, if you had someone's social security number in one of your file drawers, you're not allowed to have any information about a veteran or a claimant locked in any drawers or in any cabinets. It has to be out and visible on your desk. So that's the reason that they say they do the desk searches.
So if you have a list of claims you're keeping track of, you can keep a list in your computer, but you couldn't write it down, for instance.
Yeah, but sometimes this is my third computer I've had since I've worked there, so sometimes your computer will just stop working. And, you know, you don't know why that happens, but sometimes that's not even safe. So for me, I funnel stuff. When I want to report something, I send it to the Inspector General immediately, so that even if something goes wrong, at least they have it.
Sure. And then, later, have you found that stuff was there? Because I know there were people in Oakland, they turned things over to the Inspector General, and then it just kind of went away.
Yeah, usually what I'll do is I will send it, I take all the PII off of it, so I can send it to my own email.
So that's what, personal identifying information?
Yeah, like you can't send people's information to your home email, but you can remove the information. so that you have a record that you reported something.
Okay. And you and I spoke off the air at one point, and I remember you telling me that you had people throughout your building that since you were a public, you know, a public face of whistleblowing, people would bring issues to you and report them to you. But you pointed out something I hadn't really thought of, that those folks at some point later, if management gets on their case because they find out that they're providing information, they have no protection because they've been under the radar the whole time.
Yeah, and that's something that I would suggest to anybody. Don't be anonymous, because there's certain pieces of information that I get that I would never know that information. Someone had to tell me this. So obviously someone else is out there undercover being a whistleblower. So you have to figure that person really has no protection because they didn't whistleblow.
Yeah, and in some cases, the information they're giving you could have only come from a certain person. So
it's kind of a catch-22, though, because people know. Okay, so how about this? Better to go as a is it better to be a team of people, or I would think it's better to be a team than an individual. But is that true?
I think it's definitely better to be a team, but then you have to make sure the members of your team have credibility, because the VA is real quick to knock on a whistleblower and say, oh, that person's a liar. They're failing their performance standards. They'll try and make the person look like they're crazy when they're reporting things. So you have to be careful who's on your team.
Oh, yeah, that's a really important, I guess I kind of forgot about that. Yeah, if you have somebody who's kind of flaky or kind of only in it for them, and they, you know, you always have those people who play both sides of the fence.
Yeah, and you can't have an embellisher, because when I report things, I want to make sure every bit of it's true. And if I can't have a piece of paper to prove everything I'm going to say, I'm probably not going to say it yet until I can get proof. So some people will just report everything where they have no proof about it, and they look like they're embellishing the truth, and then they can't prove it, so then they become untrustworthy.
That makes sense. I didn't really.
So you always want to have proof, or else you won't get anywhere. And once you whistleblow and you're on the radar, you need to do it. You need to be successful. Because if we would have went to the IG and they said, oh, the things that you reported, we didn't find anything. Well, we still have to work there then, and it's uncomfortable when then you look like you told on somebody, but you might have not been telling the truth. Even though you were, you just couldn't prove it.
Sure. Yeah, you wind up being the one who cried wolf, as they say.
Yep.
And then when you go again, well, that's so there is a bit of a strategy to it. Not that you plan. You actually just went there to go do your job. I realize that, but now the strategy has changed. We'll talk more about this in just a couple seconds. We've got to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. This could cover either way. Could be the whistleblowers. Could be the employers. Welcome to We the People Radio. We are joined by Kristen Rule out of Philadelphia. Kristen, how long have you lived in Philadelphia anyway?
I moved to Philadelphia the night before my first day at the VA. So, since August of 2007.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, you've been there a while.
So you've been there long enough. We were trading pictures the other day. I was sending her pictures of Mount Shasta, and she said she's looking at the Philadelphia skyline. I was like, oh, yeah. My my pictures were pretty good, though, aren't they?
Yes, beautiful.
I was out in the boonies, working in the boonies, which was nice. Love a good day in the boonies. So, okay, you said there are probably 20 people at your facility, and I was talking to Ryan the other night, and he said there are like 3,000 people who work there.
I really honestly don't know how many people work here.
Yeah, he said it was like 3,000 people. And it's a ton. Now, are you guys all in the same building? Or is pension management, call center, are those all separate places?
The call center is a separate place, but it's moving to our building, I think, on May 27th. So we'll be back all in the same building. We used to house a social security office, and they left. So the call center is moving in there.
Wow. So basically everybody in your giant skyscraper is VA, huh?
Yep, hopefully.
Oh, nice. So you get a lot of elevator time with people. And are there some people now that just kind of steer clear of you?
Yeah, some. I mean, there's always going to have management always has their loyal crew that probably hopes that if management survives this and stays in power, that they'll be the next people to be managers. So they'll, you know, stay true to them till the end. But most people enjoy what we're doing and are happy that we're trying to make a difference.
So at the end of the day, have you seen change because of this?
I've seen change as to the way I'm treated because of this, but overall for the veterans' sake and the way that the procedures are done in our office, I haven't seen change. I see them being reactive and fixing things that were found, but I don't see them preventing anything from happening in the future.
In light of the recent hearings and the stuff that's been brought to light, do you think that's going to matter? Do you think they're going to respond to that in a positive way and make the changes that need to be made?
I think if they fire a few people, people will respond much better because they'll realize that they have to, even if they don't have it in them to do the right thing, they have no choice but to do the right thing or they'll be next. But I think if everybody just gets shuffled around and move to a different job and keeps their grade and keeps their money, it's going to be a bad lesson because then there's going to be no incentive for people to do the right thing.
Sure. There has to be accountability. And if there's no accountability, then it will continue.
You got to roll a couple heads.
Yeah. So
off with their heads.
You've got to draw a little blood. And then they'll know you're serious.
Yeah. Somebody has to be used as an example. Because, I mean, I think there's been a lot of bad things happening in our office. And I don't understand how issuing a report and attending a training or two can fix all those people.
Yeah, no kidding. And then, okay, so with the first set of things that you guys brought up, how did that work? You went to, what was actually the process? You went to the media first? No.
I first reported things up the chain of command because I didn't know all the things that I know today.
And that was the wrong move, right?
That was the worst thing I could have ever done because I thought I was helping, but I didn't realize they don't want you to help. So as they were trying to cover up, I was trying to help, and we were bumping heads, but they have more power than me internally, so I realized that was not a good move. So then I started saying, well, in order to do something about this, I need to get someone from the outside interested. So then I started contacting Congress people and trying to find somebody that would believe in what I was saying and help me, who had a little bit more power. So then I figured, well, if I had them in my corner, at least if stuff started happening to me, someone could go up to bat for us, if we could show them that what we were telling was the truth. So then I started reporting things to the Office of Special Counsel, which really got me nowhere. And I reported things to the Inspector General, and they had an investigation, and they said this was occurring, but nothing really was being done to change it. So we went to the media. And the media was the first time that we got attention on the problem and that they knew they had to do something about it. And I think once you go to the media, it kind of says it's a statement about yourself. Like, the government managers think they're in power and in control the whole time, but once you go to the media, they kind of back off and realize, wow, you know, one phone call from this person can set our world upside down. So
yeah, because at that point, they're having to respond. They have no choice. Yep. They have to.
Now, was this print or TV or what kind of media?
The first thing we did was we went to the New York Times.
Oh, that's kind of good media.
Like, yeah, and so one of the reporters, we were explaining what was going on, and he was very interested in it, and he wrote two stories in 2012, I think it was. And so he wrote one about the double payments and one about the mail shredding. And then that prompted, from doing that, I think it made the IG take the investigation a little more serious. And they did admit that these things that we were saying were happening, but they admitted that they couldn't find these payments. Like, they couldn't data mine correctly to find all of them. They weren't sure how many there were because it was hard to locate them, which is true. It is a big problem finding these payments. So it kind of fizzled away then, and a lot of the other things I was complaining about, like them not collecting the money after they paid people twice, it all just fizzled away until June of 2014. Then there was a second Inspector General investigation, which then with that came congressional hearings, and now I think it's been so exposed, I don't think it'll fizzle away this time.
That's kind of nice. And how did you get the reporter? Was it somebody that someone knew, or did you just send emails to the New York Times and finally somebody responded? Or
yeah, what had happened was I had represented an employee who had been fired in a case against our office. He worked there, and he needed help, and he said, can you help me out? And I said, all right, I'll do my best. And so they put him on paid admin leave, so he had unlimited time to send emails to anybody. So during the day, I would go to work, and I'd do my job all day. And he'd be at home getting paid by the VA because they illegally fired him and didn't want him in the office after he won his job back. They paid him to sit at home. So he'd sit at home and send emails all the time to congressmen, senators, media people. And, you know, for every 100 you send, probably someone will bite. So he got in contact with somebody from the New York Times and then, of course, put me in contact with them. And that's how we ended up there.
I bet that, or maybe it didn't, but what was the repercussions when they,
yeah, when
out
they showed
you,
up
you,
in the New
you
York
were,
Times?
Well, when they found out you were representing this person, did that make things kind of tough for you on the job?
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
But when we first had done this, I don't think they took us serious. Like when he said, oh, my representative's going to be this girl that works downstairs, they're probably like, well, how are you even going to prepare? You have to work an eight-hour day, and a half-hour day, and we have mandatory overtime. So I think they thought, you know, I don't think they took us serious, but we made sure we were going to win that case. We stayed up. We researched laws, and we ended up finding that they violated due process when they fired him. So we had a hearing at the Merit Systems Protection Board, and we won, and the agency was reversed, and he got his job back, and he showed up to work the day he was supposed to go to work. He got fingerprinted. They gave him his badge, and then they proposed to fire him again that day.
You're kidding.
No, I wish I was. I mean, I spent a lot of hours on that. So then we geared up again for round two, and we even told them, listen, don't fire him again. Here's the law that says you can't. But they did it anyway.
What were they firing him for?
The production points. What they'll do is if you're a whistleblower, you have to make sure that you get your production points at work each day. Because if you want to file a case for whistleblower retaliation, if you are indeed a whistleblower and your action that they did you falls under retaliation, then you have to also, there's one more catch to it. The agency has to prove the agency had no legal reason to fire you. So aside from this whistleblowing. So what they'll do is they'll make you fail your production points so that they can go after you that way. So this guy was brand new. And we would argue that they were withholding work from him and, you know, giving him the tougher cases that didn't generate points so that he wasn't, you know, and sometimes they go in and they invalidated some of his points in the Aspen system. Like he did some claims in September and got credit for him. And then in December, when he was supposed to be evaluated for this improvement plan, they took him out.
Nice.
So originally, though, he was a whistleblower?
Oh, yeah. He was a very big whistleblower. You should talk to him sometime. He's very interesting. He's a veteran. He served in the Navy. He has a law degree, and he used to report things that were illegal in the building, and they didn't like it. So he, you know, mysteriously kept failing for his points. But that's why I think the point system is such a bad thing. It gives them power to basically hide discrimination and retaliation behind failing someone for their numbers.
Right.
Interesting. And there's no real...
They got a little built-in safety net there.
Sure.
To basically pull any punch they want.
Because then if you say they did it on purpose, then they're like, you're just a bad employee.
Yeah, you're not doing your job.
God, that is such a
And you have to prove it. So then it becomes you didn't fail. The VA failed you, but you need to prove that in court. So you have to show, you know, oh, what we had to do is we had to go find letters that were written by other employees. When you work at the VA, you have this thing called a digit range where you might work on everybody's cases who have the last two digits of their social security number for 50. So if you see a claim that ends in a 50 and someone else's initials are on it, you know someone's been working on your cases. So what we had to do was gather up a bunch of letters with other people's initials that were his work to show that they were giving away his easy work. So it takes it's a lot of work. Once you start to get targeted there, you have to be a great note taker.
You better step up your game, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah. You always have to be a step ahead of them because they're good at this. They've been doing this for a long time.
And there's more of them than there are of you. On that happy note, we've got to take another quick break. We'll be right back with Kristen Rule, talking about whistleblowers and the VA, and God knows we need lots more, tons more. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Could be the new whistleblower theme song.
It's all about the cameras.
We pulled out two of our best. I was hoping you enjoyed that.
Oh, my God. For the rest of my life, when I hear that, I'm going to think of
this. Oh, my gosh. We did one on surveillance. We had a couple of programs actually on surveillance, and Bob found the one about when you're in the shower and they're watching you. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It does give new meaning.
I got a question, Kristen. What other things does the VA fire people for, or use as an excuse to fire people? I mean, typically, you know, if someone's not doing their job, that's usually the go-to reason to let somebody go in private industry, or, you know, maybe a customer service issue or something like that. But what other types of things get people in hot water and get them dismissed from the VA?
Their latest thing in the last few months is they've been accusing people of cursing, and they'll write you up and they'll say that you cursed in the office. Yes. Somebody had to file an EEO complaint because they accused him of cursing, and the man said, I didn't curse. And of course they have no proof if he cursed or he didn't curse. It's one supervisor saying, you cursed at me, and the employee saying, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do that.
Does it have to be something good, or is it just garden variety, you know, hell and damn type stuff?
Well, this employee was accused of saying the F word, but I mean, in
right
general, yeah, it's really bizarre. It's a lot of wasted time. So they try to get you in trouble for things like that, which they'll never be able to prove. So it's really a waste of time. They will tell you take too long of a break so that they can get you in trouble for not being, like, you know, not following the proper rules. They'll say that people have signed in early. So when you get there, you have to sign your name on a piece of paper and what time you get there. But there's no clock right there. So some people might have a watch on. Some people might look at their cell phone. Some people might just guess. Some people might say, oh, so-and-so signed in before me. I'll just write that time because he just signed in. So their latest thing is they've been watching people and accusing them of signing in too early. Now,
why don't they have a time clock? I mean, if that's an issue, that'd be
3,000 people in a building.
That seems
have a time
it would
clock?
Be the way to stop that would be just to put a time clock in and punch a card.
Yeah, no, we don't have anything like that. Or, you know, we all wear a badge, and anytime you want to go in a door, you have to swipe it. So even when you come in, you could swipe somewhere
on
the badge that we have. But yeah, we don't. It's funny because it's the honor system, but then they don't believe anybody.
That's great.
Why does that just make perfect sense in the context of the VA? Oh, my gosh. And AWOL's another biggie, right? You have a lot of disabled veterans, and it seems like, you know, anybody who's out for a service, a lot of times it's a service-connected disability. For heaven's sakes, they're at the dang VA. They should know what a service-connected disability is. And yet they have a note from their doctor, or they get taken off work by their physician, and they get fired for being AWOL.
Or they'll tell you the note that you brought in isn't good enough. You need to go get another note. That's a common thing that they'll do. Or if you want a day off or you need a day off, for instance, when it snowed here in the winter, some people said, oh, I can't come in because, you know, there's a foot of snow outside. I can't get there. Or the buses aren't running, whatever the reason was. So if it's not sick leave, but if it's annual leave, so if, you know, if you're not sick the day of the snowstorm and you have to use a vacation day, they say that you must speak to a supervisor. Well, when it snowed, half the supervisors didn't show up, and the other half teleworked. So these poor employees are calling these extensions a whole bunch of times. No one's answering. And then they had to leave a message to their boss saying, listen, I can't get there today. I'm trying to call out. I know I have to speak to a person, but no person is available. I'm leaving you a message. And they got charged AWOL.
No kidding.
Mm. Yeah, and so that's like these little tactics. This is the kind of stuff that they do.
And email won't work?
Oh, no, never. You must talk to a human, even when there's no human there.
Of course, if you talk to a human, there's no proof you talk to a human.
Exactly.
Right.
That's super handy.
I mean, that's in our business. I mean, if you want something, you know, if you're going to complain about something, you better have documentation. Just like you were saying, you have to have proof. And typically that's an email or a voice recording or something where, you know, you have backup. But just, I talked to somebody and they said this never flies. But that's what they require.
That's what they require.
And then if you're sick, you're allowed to leave a voicemail. But if you're not sick, you're not allowed to leave a voicemail.
Well, so what if you're...
sick of the snow?
That wasn't what I was going to say.
Oh, that's not okay.
Someone had their house flooded. That was another issue. Their house was flooding, and they're calling their boss, and their boss isn't answering. So they left a message, and they were charged AWOL because they didn't speak to somebody.
Oh, poor.
Well, their house was flooding.
Yeah.
Wow. And so then once you file as a whistleblower, all bets are off on the game then. So all the things that were difficult before become 1,000,000% more difficult, I would imagine, because now
you have to make sure, you know, when I take a break, I make sure it's like 14 minutes, not 15, because if it's I was accused of taking too long of a break once past 15 minutes. So, you know, there's a lot of people that go to the gym at lunch, and you know they probably take a little more than 30 minutes. But
how do they know how much time you took if there's no way to clock in and clock out? Is that when you swipe your badge in and out?
From the time that they accused me, they were following me and timing me.
Oh my gosh, I don't think that's illegal. They can't stalk you, can they?
Sure, they can. They do it all the time. Nice.
Ooh, well, that's spooky.
Yeah, you know, but then that's another thing. How can you prove this? How can you prove how long I was outside? But I call the VA. This is my joke, how I keep my sanity with the VA. I call it the Truman Show. Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Cue the pedestrians.
Cue the pedestrians.
Yeah, like I feel like when I'm in there, it's just a different world. Like, you know, the rules are there, but they sometimes don't follow them. And there's supposed to be things that would protect me, but it doesn't really happen, so... I just accept the fact that I'm at the Truman Show for 8.5 hours.
Wow.
Well, we have a situation where, well, I won't say I work there because it's a friend of mine works there. And we have one person that talks loud and I was told that I'm going to pepper spray him in the face and then just say, seriously, dude, I thought you were going to attack me. But I don't imagine that would probably work.
Yeah, that won't work either. Yeah, I would imagine pepper spray.
If you're off-site and there's a supervisor following you, though, I mean, isn't that kind of like stalking?
Yeah.
I was on-site. They were timing me, and then they called my – this wasn't even a supervisor. This was my supervisor's manager, and she was, I guess, timing me. So then she called my supervisor and told him he better come out and get me. And I was on a phone call with a lawyer. It was so embarrassing. They ran out and, like, you know, said, you've been out past 15 minutes. You need to come in. I said, great. I have off today. I'm allowed to be out here 4 hours, you know. But
unless you're my mom.
Yeah.
So you, exactly. In Ryan's, he's actually, when ask Ryan about it. He was there when that happened.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've got David on the line from San Francisco. He has a question for you. Fire away, David.
Oh, howdy. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I remember in some statistical ways, like back in the Civil War, I think it was an average, if instead of, there got to be a strategy with the military of intentionally wounding the other side, because it would take, if I remember right, during the Civil War, it would take 11 people to take care of an injured soldier. And so if you wounded the other side to such a degree, you would take so much of their population to take care of the wounded soldiers that you could basically win by decimation like that. And I think by World War I, they had brought it down to an 8-to-1 ratio. So now when we hear about the VA and that they're so useless, it gets into, you know, how many hours are they spending on studying their own employees rather than taking care of the troops?
I totally agree. I think there's a lot of people there that have too much time on their hands. They spend their day making lists. They just paper push. Like Washington will say, we need to get these cases done on this list, and then the managers will send that to the next level down and say, and so those people have some free time, I guess, to do these things.
Well, I think it also gets back to, you know, when the VA can't get the job done, they need more money. They need, you know, more money will cure the problem, which it never does.
So let's keep everybody
running. But we just keep throwing more money at it, and, you know, that's a great point, David. I mean, more money doesn't solve the issue. It's procedures.
I like the Civil War thing, though. Kristen, maybe next time you have to go represent somebody, you can use that.
Yeah, definitely.
Ask them if it's that 11-to-1 ratio, or are they just trying to take people off the fighting line?
Well, where I was actually going to go with it, after World War II, it was discovered, you know, of course, that a whole bunch of Nazis had gotten into this country. The CIA had allowed them in, the Dulles brothers, a bunch of different people facilitated that rat line. And actually, the CIA was helped developed by one of the famous Nazi intelligence guys. And there was a Project Gladio, G-L-A-D-I-O, and that was where the Nazis, after World War II, were intentionally putting themselves into positions of power so that they could facilitate the rise of the Fourth Reich. And so I'm wondering whether the VA is filled with some of these people from Gladio who are intentionally making sure that the troops are not covered. I was watching the Daily Show not too long ago, and they were saying that the VA, it takes 44 days to be seen by a doctor. And I mean, that's so insane, you know, that you got a problem, you need to get it seen, and it's going to take you 44 days to get an appointment. That they intentionally, I mean, that gets into far, far from an 11-to-1 ratio. You know, they got to be dealing with a 50-to-1 ratio when it takes 44 days. And so whether these people in the VA are part of this Gladio, that they're intentionally trying to drag down America to, you know, get everybody so disenchanted with their own country that they don't have any loyalty to it.
I kind of like that. Actually, it's so much more, it's so much easier to accept than the fact that the garden variety incompetence has risen to a position where we only promote the people who will do it the wrong way. Because that's just too depressing.
That's a point that's, I think, true with any government agency. Anytime you have the government take over management of anything, it's going to take 10 times more people and become less efficient. It just seems that way anyway.
Yeah, bigger it gets, the tougher.
Correct me
it
if
is.
I'm wrong, but
I think you're good.
Well, you know, I see, you know, so many things that could be privatized in California and done for a lot less money than having government agencies do it. So, this can't be any different.
However, that is a different program.
Yes, it is.
We must take a quick break on this program. Thank you, David, for your call. We appreciate it. I'm looking up Project Gladio when I get home, because I'm sure there will be a way for us to use that in the future. I can just see it now. Yeah. And the Civil War thing, I like that, too. That's awesome.
Yeah, we can bring the Nazis into it, too, you know. So.
Ding.
Ding.
All righty. We're going to be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We have tons of archives, and this show will be up and running on archive in about half hour after we're done, I suppose. Be right back.
my doctor on the telephone. Help me, doctor, something's wrong. I can't shake it, it's gone too far. He said, tell me what your symptoms are. He said, my hands are sweaty and my knees are weak. I can't eat and I can't sleep. It's turning me every way but loose.
There you go, Kristen. Now you have a break song. Jeez Louise. You know, we have to have a much either a much longer show or more breaks so we can fit in more songs. Because really, necking it down to the good ones is tough. So many choices, so little time. So, all right. So in the last few minutes here that we have with you before we bring Ryan on, what would you tell people if they're out there, especially if they're at a VA around the country and they're thinking, I'm not going to be the first one, you know, nobody wants to be first.
And then find some friends and do a group effort and everybody do it together. Because when we did the New York Times article, it was Ryan, myself, and another guy named Ken Crandall. So all three of us did it together. Ryan and I had to go to work the next day. Ken, of course, was on paid admin leave, but it wasn't so bad knowing there was someone else in the building that could relate.
Yeah, and I have the picture of you guys. Don't I still have that on the site here? I'm scanning down the page.
That's why I felt so bad
for
Rusty Ann, because that's the first thing she told me at the hearing. She said, I didn't have anybody. I was all by myself, and I can't imagine doing this all by yourself.
Well, see, and Tony was ahead of her, and he got picked off. The thing that they clipped him for, again, was AWOL, disabled vet, out on medical leave, and they filed him as AWOL. They fired him and then ultimately had to rehire him because it was a wrongful termination. But then they fired him again right after. It's really weird when you were telling the story earlier.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like their standard operating
procedure.
Yeah,
I was like, hey, I know
there.
That story. It's a different guy. He's 3,000 miles away. So now he's got, I don't know, 11 EEO complaints out there, and basically nothing's happening.
I know. It may take like 2 years to get resolved, those EEO complaints. But eventually, I mean, the guy who's got in our office who got fired twice, he lives in Florida now. He'll probably never work again. So, I mean, he wanted to work and come back to the VA, but after everything that happened to him, he said, I can't go in that building anymore.
Yeah, I could imagine that.
Well, the stress has just got to be overwhelming.
Yeah, it's got to be massive.
You just know once they're after you, you really won't ever get a fair chance again. That's why I choose to stay at the job that I have. I don't apply for other jobs. Right now, I'm scared because at least I know with my job, I know what I have to do to succeed. And I've done my job for a while, so for them to start picking on me and saying I'm not doing my job, it'll be a little harder. But if I should apply for a new job that I'm not familiar with, that's a chance for them to get me.
Oh, so if you were to switch into a different, back to pension management or something like that, you'd wind up potentially under the big-time scrutiny and having to climb that hill again?
Yeah, because if I move to a production job, I'll have to worry about that. If I don't know the job, then I won't know that they don't give you much time to learn things at the VA. So I don't want to have to learn something and be given half the time I need to learn it to learn it and then be told I'm not performing and them get me that way. So I just stay put for now.
That's just, isn't that crazy? And so even if you're good at it, if you're good at this, and those seem to be the people who traditionally come forward, and yet the VA routinely, I know to the congressional offices, that what the VA says is that these are all just disgruntled employees.
Always. They'll tell you that we're crazy. So that's another reason I told a couple of the people that tell me things, you know, but are afraid to come forward. I say, all right, I'll take one for the team because this isn't my first job I've ever had. It starts to look weird if, you know, I'll be 40 next month and I've never gotten in trouble. I've never been arrested. I've never had detention. So when I got to the VA, I started getting this rap sheet internally, and it doesn't make sense that you can go through your
You're
whole
a
life.
Wild one now.
Yeah, but it's okay. It's just a Truman rap sheet.
You become a bad girl at the VA. So that's why I said, you know, some people who might have had something, you know, in their past, they'll use that against them. So it's good if you just have your production points that you need. You haven't been in trouble at work before. Then it's hard for them to act like you're a misfit.
That is just nuts. Absolutely nuts. Okay. And then do you see in your facility, do you see them using people's disabilities against them?
For sure. Definitely.
That is wrong on so many levels.
PTSD, back problems, whatever it is, and a lot of the cases, people have asked for a reasonable accommodation, and just never happens.
Yeah, I don't think they're familiar enough with the legal side of EEO complaints, so they take their time, and then, you know, as the person's suffering, and then in the end, they don't care if they have to pay out a lot of money because it's not their money.
That's true. That's true. They just get the taxpayers to foot the bill for their bad behavior.
Right.
Great deal.
To them, it's like, well, if they don't feel like granting this accommodation, why should they?
Yeah, you can't make us.
Right. And,
but then they also have their bonus program still in place, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen legislation trying to get rid of the bonuses, but it seems, I mean, we got a bonus last year, I will say. Like, our bonuses aren't the ones you read in the newspapers, but there still are bonuses because we did get one last year.
Yeah, and if they're performance-based, that's one thing. But a lot of these are I know at one point in one facility they were cobbling it together out of, like expense categories, mileage, that kind of thing. And they were siphoning it off and using it for a bonus program that they had invented for themselves, which is fairly clever accounting.
They call them performance-based, but there's all these categories. Like, there's a production part of the category, a quality part, organizational support. So if they don't like you and they don't want you to get a bonus, they'll say that you don't cooperate. And then they'll give you a lower score in that category. So even if you have great production and great quality, if you get a low score in this cooperation element, well, then you won't get a bonus.
Unbelievable. Oh, Kristen, how our time flies by. I just wanted to let people know I did put a picture of you and Ryan and Ken from that article. The 2010 article is down at the bottom of the page. You know what? We love talking to you. Thanks a lot for joining us on Mother's Day.
Thanks for having me. Have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. It just goes too fast. Thanks a million.
Yep. Bye.
All right, folks, stick with us. We have another hour here. And if you can't, catch us on the archive at wethepeopleradio.us. It's all there for you. And this song is special for Kristen.
Stay tuned for Hour 2 of We the People on KCNR, Shasta Redding.